Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Science and Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Terry Daniel, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756. Or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio. And good evening to you, Bob.
And thank you, Fran. And tonight's show, as you mentioned, a guest will be coming on in a little bit. And she will be talking about a whole bunch of things, channeling. She actually counsels bereaved individuals. She explores cultural myths and religious myths. And when we talk about channeling, it's always a fascinating subject. You know, so channeling is very often interchanged, you know, with mediumship. I always thought about it as the difference being channeling is usually more of a direct recipient of information that seems to be something significant, as opposed to, you know, mental mediumship where you get bits and pieces of that you put together from discarded individuals. And in channeling, some of the information is very explicit, very prophetic, gives information about what life is like on the other side. So it's kind of hard to wrap your head around, you know, channeling sometimes. Because,
but is channeling different than mediumship?
Well, I think it
has to be, according to what you're saying. I mean, well, channeling, the information is very specific. It seems to be controlled by somebody other than the medium.
Yeah, I mean, channeling is mediumship, but it's it has a different texture to it. And I think the real difference, the defining difference, is in the quality of the information.
But who can evaluate the information?
Well, you know, nobody. We can form our own opinion.
Well, I know, because right now I'm reading the Seth books, which...
Right.
You're going back to the late 60s, early 70s of quote-unquote channeled information. This woman was not a medium. She was just playing around with psychic stuff, actually a Ouija board when the whole thing started. And her information also is very specific. We have mediums on our medium advisory board, and their channeled, quote-unquote channeled information of the other side is very specific. But I find that all of these different channeled pieces of information from what the other side is like are all different.
Yeah, I would agree, except that I do find in reading many of the same books that you read and some of the accounts written by some of the researchers is that a lot of the information, there are common themes.
The themes, right, but yeah. That's the same as, you know, near-death experiencers.
Right.
You know, people will argue about the tunnel, and yet they all call it a tunnel, but it's indescribable in our language. So somebody said tunnel, and now everybody's saying tunnel. But what is it really?
Right. Well, in the channeled, a lot of the channeled information that I've read that gives descriptions of what life is like in the other dimension, some common themes are that it's a world of thought. It's a world where we can the spirit can manifest matter. You know, if they so desire. Some describe places of learning. Some describe places where, like resting places, when people go when they first cross over. a lot of them talk about.
Right, and that all matches that book that we keep talking about. Now I've forgotten the name of the book, but where it's also a channeled thing, and it talks about different levels when you go to the other side, and people first crossing over needing help and guidance, and there's a committee there.
Yeah.
Helping you adjust.
Right, and they talk about the committees, they talk about scientists, you know.
But these are all our words. These are all physical existence words.
Right.
Whereas you're talking about a world that doesn't have physicality to it. So what it makes me think of is that if it is an existence of thought, you can then manifest the physicality for your own entertainment, benefit, or whatever. But it's not a necessity for the existence there.
Yeah, I also find when I read some of these accounts, and some more than accounts, their entire books, with literally hundreds of pages of exact transcripts of words coming from the other side, and as I read them, you know, you find yourself, you know, just amazed, and you so want to believe that this information is accurate. But yet, as you say, you might read another channeled excerpt or a book, and then there are sometimes vast differences, you know, and then you say, well, how is one giving such an accurate description, an explicit description, and the other one sometimes is diametrically different, you know, so it makes you wonder, is one person giving false information? I don't think so. I think that if it's a world of thought, I mean, different spirits have different perception of the way they see
it. It's the other way around. We have the perception. They're sending us the telepathic sensation of what it is. And then we go and try and put it in words, and that's where it gets messed up. And
well, I disagree with you a little bit on that. I mean, I think that just because they're in spirit, I mean, they say that, you know, you don't have to gain any great knowledge, you know.
No, I understand
you're
that.
You're making observations, so.
Right, but telepathy is telepathy. Can I telepathize better than you?
No, but the information that one spirit may be giving you is different than another spirit, because that's the way that they see it. You may be getting the transmission correct from both, but the people in spirit have different points of view.
And I think it's on the receiving end.
Well,
it's the interpreter who's putting it into language. It's the same thing. If I speak French to you, I could speak my idea correctly, but because of the interpretation or how you understand the French language, you may misunderstand what I'm saying. If I'm speaking to a Frenchman, he probably would think I'm an idiot.
I agree with you when it comes to mental mediumship, but I think that when it comes to descriptions, you know, come through channeling, I think that we make a mistake by thinking that everybody thinks, so-called thinks alike on the other side. Some people I know describe, you know, seven levels. Some describe less. Some describe, you know, infinite number of levels, you know.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that they think that the thinking process is different or the same on the other side. I'm saying the process of telepathy is the process of telepathy.
Right. Well, that
you still need somebody in the physical world to receive the telepathic information from the other side, channeled from the other side, to interpret it and speak the way we're speaking right now, because there is no language.
Well, you know, perhaps we're going to go to a break in a moment. And
that's not a good response.
And when we we're going to get some insight from our guest, because she also, you know, is channeling. So when we come back, we'll have our guest, you know, Terry Daniel. So stay with us, and we will be right back.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is, objective evidence of survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. The number here is 1-888-815-9756. And tonight's guest is Terry Daniel. Terry is an author, a grief guidance facilitator, an afterlife awareness educator. She counsels bereaved individuals throughout the U.S. She offers alternative perspectives on death, dying, and the afterlife. She's the author of A Swan in Heaven, which is based on dialogues with her son Danny, who died at age 16. And her new book is coming out now called Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. In the book, Terry explores cultural and religious myths about the afterlife. She offers a path, an alternative to the way we perceive things. She'll talk about things like meditation, visualization, and after-death communication. And her website you can visit at danieldirect.net. Welcome, Terry.
Hi, thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. If I could talk without choking, I think that would help. You know, I wanted to start off, you, from reading your book, you mentioned, you know, a new term which I wasn't familiar with, and that's a transition guide. Tell us what a transition guide does.
Oh, great. Okay, well, you may know of someone named Diane Goble who started something called transition guide training. She had a very detailed near-death experience probably 20 years ago. She's a licensed psychotherapist and has all kinds of credentials. And she trains people to literally help somebody walk across the threshold. She, like myself, we're both hospice workers. We've worked with hospice a lot. And we have found that while the hospice community and the clergy and everybody around that world is very good at helping you walk up to the door of death, they're very bad at helping you walk through it. And so this is kind of a radical transformation that we're trying to put through in hospice care. And what Diane trains us to do is lead people who are dying, actively dying, in guided visualizations to travel to heaven, to the higher realms, to communicate with the ancestors, guides, loved ones, Jesus, whoever they see there, because when you work with the dying, this happens quite frequently. And what usually happens in the medical establishment is if somebody sees their dead mother or they see Jesus, they are considered to be hallucinating. But, of course, we know better than that. So we try to have them work with that experience and actually have dialogue with whoever they see. And if they don't see anybody, we have meditations where we take them on a journey. Sometimes it's a boat going down a river. There's various visuals that we use where they can breathe deeply and calmly release themselves slowly into the next world, because it's a very slow process.
Mm. And I know that one of the other terms that I saw, you know, you write about is being a spiritual midwife. You know, that's an interesting term. I guess if you consider death like a rebirth, it's an apt moniker. You know, spirit.
Yeah.
You know,
I I didn't come up with that term. I can't take credit for that.
Right.
This transition guide, is this available to even people who are not in hospice situations? I mean, very often hospitals have it set up where the patient doesn't have the opportunity to move into hospice, and the family members are sitting with the loved one when they are getting ready to transition. Is this a service that's available to anyone?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not exclusively tied to hospice. And any family, anybody can do this. If you have someone dying at home, if you're in the hospital, absolutely. And I'll even give you Diane's website. It's, I think it's just transitionguidetraining.com, or somebody, you can just look up Diane Goble, G-O-B-L-E.
Okay.
And what Diane does is train people to do this. But the interesting thing is, once we're trained to do this, where do we find the opportunities to do this? And one of the things we would like to see happen politically and socially is that hospitals have somebody like us on staff, just like they have ministers and chaplains. But you'll find that the hospital chaplains are not trained in transitioning people. They come to do last rites after somebody dies. But there is really nobody whose job it is to sit there with a dying person and help them cross over.
Yeah, I understand that. And as you well know, especially, you know, in this country, most people, you know, regard death as the ultimate enemy. I mean, they spend their whole lives, you know, trying to avoid it. They don't even like to talk about the subject. And, you know, you suggest that death can be, you know, a journey of awakening. And, you know, that's an unusual term, you know, for death, a journey of awakening. But when you refer to it as an awakening, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, I describe it as a revolving door. Birth and death are opposite sides of the door. Death is not the opposite of life. Death is the opposite of birth. And, in fact, Bill Guggenheim came up with a wonderful phrase that I've never heard before, which is the interlife. So you have the afterlife, where you are when you're not in a body, and when you're in that space, the life between lives, assuming that you believe in reincarnation, is called the interlife. So there's all of these phases and all this stuff going on, and it is a rebirth. And the concept of a death midwife, there's an old ancient Celtic term called Anamkara. And there's a group of people that do training for Anamkaras, which is, it means soul friend to the dying. Just like a midwife is with you when you're having a baby and trains you for childbirth and is there and takes care of the baby when it's first born, there used to be, in some cultures, people who did this with death because they understood that it was just a rebirth into another world.
Hmm. And that imagery is, you know, is prevalent in, you know, when we read many of the ancient scriptures and the ancient, read about ancient culture. I mean, even the, you know, the Egyptians, you know, had doorways to the afterlife, you know, and they believed that you were reborn again. One thing that I wanted to mention to you, or we wanted to ask you, is we were bantering a little bit about channeling before, and I know that especially in your first book, A Swan in Heaven, you had a lot of channeled information from your son who was in spirit, you know, Danny. And I know that when we talk about channeling, many people tell us that it's difficult, you know, to really know whether the words, whether the images are truly coming from spirit, and how can you rule out that it's coming from your own, you know, conscious thoughts. So how do you go about, at least at the beginning, how do you tell the difference?
That's a really good question, and it is difficult, especially for people who are beginning. And one of the things that I do in my workshops is I teach people how to channel, because I believe it's a birthright. I think we are all made to do that. We have that ability. When we come here to incarnate on Earth, where do we come from? Well, we come from home. We come from the spirit realm. We come from the light, and we are just a little chunk of that light, you know, broken off and put into a body for a short period, and our relationship with the light is still there. So what channeling really is just tuning in and calling home. So the very first thing that people need to learn is to understand that concept of we're tuned. It's like ET phone home. It's exactly like that. In fact, my son says it's like calling on a phone, except instead of a cell phone, it's a soul phone. He has quite a sense of humor. So what happens when you begin, and I have exercises that I give to people. I have little channeling worksheets and a process called writing a letter from heaven. And when you begin doing this, you are always going to doubt what you're getting. You're going to think, well, okay, I'm talking to my dead husband, and he's saying, I love you, don't feel guilty. And you think, well, of course, that's what I want him to say. I'm not really getting it from him. And what you do is you just push through that. You keep doing the process. Mostly it's writing. It's automatic writing. And if you can push through it and trust every single thing that you receive, you will feel suddenly something feels different, and it doesn't feel like you're talking anymore. Mm. And what you'll get is, let's say you're talking to your husband, and he's telling you something, and you're writing it down, and all of a sudden you get a vision of an apple that just sort of flies by your awareness. Write that down, apple. And then you start hearing a song in your mind or anything. And it's a process. It takes some training. It's a meditation process to receive all these images, all these thoughts, all these words, and trust every single one of them implicitly, because those are messages from spirit, from your guides, or from your loved ones.
So I just want to be clear, because I know a lot of our listeners have suffered the loss of a loved one. They want nothing more than to be able to continue the relationships. And this sounds like a way to do it. But as you say, it's a process. So when you're starting out and you're starting to write things down, you're really just writing down anything that pops into your head, that comes into your third eye vision, you're just making lists.
Yes. Well, you're opening a conduit. It's like if you're going to go jogging, you're supposed to stretch your muscles first, right? You bend over, touch your toes, and you stretch. That's kind of what this is. But you will find, I have found, because I've taught hundreds and hundreds of people how to do this, some people just jump right into it, and some people never get it. And there's a spectrum in between. There are identifiable things that can obstruct the conduit, and the biggest one is doubt and fear, of course, because that's the biggest obstruction to love. And what this kind of communication is just sending love back and forth, really. So when there's a lot of doubt and a lot of fear, it's going to be closed. When there's anger, when there's blame, all that stuff really makes it difficult. And that's why it's a process. That's why forgiveness and healing is such an important part of this, that you can't. I'll just give you an example. I have one woman that I work with whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver. And she's very angry, obviously. Of course she is. But she goes back and forth between understanding how you have to release all this anger and stuff that you're holding on to in order to open the conduit to talk to her daughter. Sometimes she gets that. Sometimes she's so wrapped up in wanting to punish this kid who was driving the car that she thinks about, you know, we're going to court and there's a trial and he needs to go to prison, and she goes to that place. And every time she goes to that place, the conduit shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one example.
Yeah. Terry, many people, when we talk about the loss of a loved one, you know, certainly, you know, in their view, you know, it's a tragedy. And then, you know, others talk about, you know, tragedies as you know, they have to be recognized as opportunities. Are people referring to, you know, opportunities for spiritual growth, that you're somehow catapulted into this new world by the loss of a loved one?
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Trauma and loss is a gift of growth. And imagine that if we went through life and there was no conflict. First of all, that's not possible. So all these little conflicts have a reason. And when I work with bereaved people, I kind of walk through these processes so that they can see that there's a reason. So let's take the mother whose daughter was killed by the drunk driver for an example. You know, it depends on your spiritual perspective. Now, you may have a spiritual perspective that says everything in the universe is random and it has no meaning. Well, that's a pretty painful place to be, because in spiritual healing, there are several points that you really have to work on in order to find spiritual peace, and finding meaning is one of those points. So if you see no meaning in the event, that's a pretty stuck place to be. Another spiritual perspective is that there's a judgmental God who just kind of pushes the buttons and pulls the strings, and we have nothing to say about it, and he just decided to take that little girl to heaven. And if that's your spiritual belief, that's going to make it pretty difficult to find meaning, because it's just this God creature who randomly makes people live and die. And there's all these, you know, variations of spiritual views. There's God is punishing us. What did we do wrong? There's so much of this. So you really have to work through all that and shift the way you think about it. And I have this saying that I just love, which is pain causes us to shift our position. Mm. So if you're sitting in a weird position, you get a cramp in your leg, you shift your body into a different position. Same thing happens emotionally.
Right. And we are talking with Terry Daniel. She's the author of Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. The number here is 1-888-815-9756. Terry, so we're getting back to what we were just talking about. Many people talk about, you know, why did this happen to me? Why do, you know, bad things happen to good people? And I know you suggest that there really aren't good and bad things, so to speak, in the universe. So want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, and there aren't even good or bad people in the universe.
Okay.
Because, I mean, when I do address a compassionate friends meeting, I'll say, how many of you in this room are bad people? Let me see a show of hands. And, of course, nobody shows their hands. And so right there, we dispel that myth that if you're a good person, bad things won't happen to you. We're all so intelligent, you think we would know better, but yet people realize when you really put them face to face with it is, oh, I guess I must have really believed that. I believed that bad things aren't supposed to happen to good people. I know a woman from Compassionate Friends, all four of her children died in unrelated events. And she says that after the first one, she thought if she lived a life that pleased God, her other children will be safe. So she did whatever she thought would please God, and her other children weren't safe. So what this tells us is that it doesn't work that way. You have a loss of faith, if you will, and that's the pain that causes the shift in perception.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, one thing that I know that struck Fran and I when we attended some Compassionate Friends meetings was that, boy, there were a lot of people that were angry at God, you know, because they thought they held up their end of the bargain, and, you know, this judgmental deity, you know, let them down. So, and that goes back to what you're talking about. You tend to think more of being connected to the greater good, or connected to the universe, and you know, we're not judged on a daily basis, nor are we judged by someone afterwards.
There is no someone.
Right.
You know,
someone is all of us, right?
That's right. The someone is the collective consciousness.
Right.
And, you know, we're hitting now on a topic, this is my big topic that I talk about, is because so many people in Compassionate Friends are religious, and their big issue is, I lost my faith. My faith said that this isn't supposed to happen to me. And that's a wonderful place to start. I mean, I love it when people come to me and say that. I go, okay, now, good. Let's work from that point forward. Where can we go from there? So now what we know is that there's not some God who's dealing cards randomly in a card game. There's not a man in the sky who's deciding what happens to you. So let's look at some other possibilities about what it is. And I give them a visual. I take a kaleidoscope with me, and I pass it around the room and have everybody look at it. And I say, if you think of a kaleidoscope, every time it turns, all those pieces fall apart and reconstruct into a different form. Well, every event in the universe, death of a child, war, plane crash, stub your toe, anything, is a turn on the kaleidoscope. And everything falls apart and comes back together in another form. That's all it is.
Mm. So when you hear people say, especially when talking about losing someone, you know, that was relatively young, and what you hear constantly is, you know, what a what unfulfilled potential, you know, what a waste of a life. I take it that you don't subscribe to that same belief or feeling.
No, I don't, because I don't believe this is the only one life that we live.
Right.
So if we lived, you know, if my son lived 16 years and then died, which he did, and I thought that that was the only shot his soul ever got at existing anywhere, I would feel like his potential was unfulfilled. But he is continuing to live and work and teach. In my case, he works with me and speaks through me in my work. But everyone who dies is continuing to work through their agreements and work through their soul plans and is with their soul family members, and they're just in a different classroom. You know, it's like the bell rang, and now it's second period, and you go to homeroom.
Mm. Well, the thing that always puzzles me when I ponder, you know, soul groups and reincarnation and the possibility that we make this agreement, you know, to incarnate, you know, in different forms, is that, you know, when we come back, so to speak, into the physical, our memory banks are erased of our past lives. We have no knowledge, although, of course, some research shows that, you know, some people do have knowledge. But for the most part, most people may get occasional glimpses but don't really have any real remembrance. So if we're here to learn a specific lesson, so to speak, or to reenact something that we made a prior agreement, I mean, how do we recognize it? I think that sometimes we're doomed just to repeat our failures because we repeat the same mistakes.
Well, there's two parts to that. And first of all, we have to forget the interlife, because being in existence without an ego, which is what it's like in heaven, is so pleasurable and so much full of love that if you were here on Earth remembering that, you wouldn't want to be here. And in fact, there are many people like that, as you probably know, people who've had near-death experiences. a lot of them are transformed in beautiful ways. Some of them are very depressed because they want to go back there. And so what happens before we incarnate is there is a process, and again, I'm going to quote my son because he talks in funny, humorous ways, and he says, do you remember the movie Men in Black?
Yeah.
Where they zapped people's memories of seeing the aliens. Do you remember
right.
that?
That's, right.
You know, he jokes. I mean, it's kind of like that, because you couldn't bear to live on Earth if you remembered heaven. And
right.
there are a lot of people like that, people that are considered psychotic, walking around the streets talking about Jesus and whatever. What do you think they're talking about?
Right.
They do remember. And as you know, little children remember, and, you know, it's quite common.
Right.
Up until they're like 3 or 4. Okay, so that's the first part. The second part is, if you asked, if we're going to learn, then why wouldn't we remember everything? Well, actually, if you do the work, if you do the meditations, if you open up to these other possibilities and work to restore or to recognize your constant connection with heaven, you will begin to remember, and you will begin to see how things work, and you will see the lessons. So when you're working with channelers or, you know, past life readers or psychics who are really, really good at what they do, and, you know, that's a caveat, they have to be good ones, you will see the lessons. You will see the connections and the members of the soul group and why things happen the way they do.
Okay. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to do some announcements, and I'd like to continue our conversation with maybe giving some techniques in meditation, you know, that people can use to try to open up some of these channels. So stay with us, and we will be back after the break.
In this age of specialization, all CPAs are not the same. Robin Lynn Murray is a New York licensed CPA that is an expert in estate planning, fiduciary tax, and accounting services for trusts and estates. Such planning can often appear to be overwhelming if you don't have the right professional on your team. If you are looking for accuracy, integrity, and personal service in your CPA, you owe yourself to contact Robin Lynn Murray. Her passion is helping her clients through life's avoidable transitions. For more information, go to www.robinlynnmurraycpa.bpweb.com or call 631-648-4996. That's 631-648-4996.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At L&R Productions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.lndrproductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windrige.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
And we've been speaking to Terry Daniel, author of two wonderful books, Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God, and The Swan in Heaven, Conversations Between Two Worlds. But before we get back to Terry, we have a few announcements we have for our listeners. First up, we have visitation rites. Next Friday, July 11th, from 7:30 to 10 p.m. at the Forever Family Foundation Conference Room in Oceanside, New York. It's a workshop for those who have lost a loved one, wish to connect with those on the other side.
July 16th, right?
What did I say?
11th. Yeah, 16th.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Bob. July 16th is next Friday.
Right.
Not tomorrow, but next Friday. And that evening is conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Angelina Diana. There are only 20 seats to this, and there are only two seats left as of tonight. If you want those two seats, you could call the office at 631-425-7707, or you could go online and reserve those two seats at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Now, Bob, did you know that there is an abundance of evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife?
I believe I did know that, Fran.
And wouldn't you just love to spend a weekend with four well-known research mediums who also happen to be on the Medium Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation?
I believe I will be interested and attending that.
And wouldn't you love to enjoy a delicious banquet dinner followed by an intimate meet and greet with scientists, researchers, and mediums while internationally renowned medium Suzanne Northrup conducts spirit communication?
Wouldn't miss it.
Well, then you need to make your arrangements for the Forever Family Foundation's fourth annual conference and our pre-conference banquet dinner this coming November in Fort Myers, Florida. It's a weekend filled with hands-on science and spirit communication. Check it all out at our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. You also might want to hurry so you don't miss the early bird gift pack that's going out to the first 20 registrants or the member-only pre-sale that will save you $50 off the regular admission if you reserve before September 1st. So give me a call in the office at 631-425-7707 and let's chat. And also, with these hard times coming upon us, some of our supporters have written to say they love the radio show, They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have the extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we're a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Easy as pie. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you onto the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on Forever Family Foundation to enter the Amazon.com website, and again, a portion of your purchases, without you spending any additional money, comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon.com, then sign up at iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for the items you're looking to purchase. For each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find the items in one of their 700-plus online stores, sites, or hotels, and that list goes on, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop and show us you care.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Back to you, Bob.
And we're going to get back to our wonderful interview with Terry Daniel, the author of Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. That book can be ordered. There's a link to Amazon on our website. And you could find out more information about Terry's work on the web at Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, direct.net. And welcome back, Terry.
Thank you.
I'd like to, a lot of people, including myself, we're always looking for ways to open up some channels of communication. It doesn't come too easy for people like me. I've tried, meditation, not seriously, but I guess that's my problem, occasionally, and I tend to give up. I was interested in reading, your book, that you do give some techniques. And I know when you talk about meditation, you talk about tapping in, and I tend to think of meditation, I have to tune out everything. But that's the wrong way, right? We're not tuning out, we're tapping in, we're listening.
That's exactly right. The kind of meditation most of us think of is a certain form of meditation, Zen Buddhist primarily, where you're supposed to go blank. I believe that that's a very, very high state of being that very few humans can attain. The only time I ever went completely blank was during 50 seconds of free fall the first time I went skydiving. That's about as close as I ever got to that space. But what meditation is, and in fact Deepak Chopra describes it this way as well, is allowing the stuff to flow through. It's like water when you go to a house that hasn't been occupied for a while and you turn on the faucet and the water comes out brown and all this minerals and stuff is in there. Mm. That's what's coming through to us all the time, but we haven't had the faucet open. So when you begin to meditate the way I teach it, you let everything come through, and eventually the water starts to run clear. Now, this is a practice, that you could clear that out in a minute or it could take 10 years, but a good example of how this works, do you know how when you're falling asleep at night, or sometimes when you wake up in the morning, you're not really dreaming, you're not really awake, and there's all these little movies playing in your head?
Yeah.
Just like huge panoramas of visions and words and stories and all this, but you can't remember any of it, and you can't nail any of it down. It goes by so fast, and it's fascinating, and you're really interested in it, but it's just whizzing by, and you can't grab any of it. Does that sound familiar? Does that happen to you?
Yeah, I just thought I was psychotic,
This is, well, what's happening when we're sleeping in this state is our body's relaxing, and we're between this state and the dream state. I'm sure there's a scientific term for it that I don't know. And so when that happens, the conduit opens. Our ego gets out of the way, and a little door, a little tunnel sort of opens up to the divine, to our divine home. And this stuff that's coming through is the angels and the guides and whoever's working with us showing us our story, basically showing us our Akashic record, all the stuff that we've been carrying with us, all these lifetimes that we want to work with. So the idea is to be able to slow that movie down enough to pluck certain images and certain words out of that stream. And what normally happens, you know, when I'm trying to meditate or anything, my brain is full of stuff, you know, like, oh, I got to lose 10 pounds. Where's my dog? You know, I got to change my oil. I hate so-and-so. What am I going to do about this? I have no money, blah, 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 whatever my internal dialogue is. So the idea is to do some processes to slow that down, and then if stuff starts to come through, you'll find weird little images and thoughts and things that make no sense. And normally we dismiss these. These are the things you want to hold on to. So I teach people to have a paper and pen, or better yet, a digital voice recorder. And when you're sitting down or lying down to meditate, which is just like lying down to take a nap, hold that tape recorder in your hand and start recording everything that goes through your mind, everything. Instead of trying to turn it off, let it come through. And if you do this once a day or once a week and you start looking at these recordings, you're going to start to see stuff that means something. It's one way to start.
Right. So when we get into these altered states of consciousness, whether they be through meditation or dreams, do you describe it as our soul, you know, that separates from our ego mind or a physical body, and it's our soul that's allowing these glimpses?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. I mean, we are basically souls, which are basically emanations of the light. And, you know, without getting too much into the history of why we decided to take human form and come to Earth in the first place, here we are having these experiences. And in order to live on Earth, we need to have certain protective clothing, so to speak. And that protective clothing is the ego. And the ego says, I want to control everything. I want people to do what I want them to do. I want things to be a certain way. I don't want to have any loss or any trauma. I want to be safe and in control at all times. The soul says, oh, here we are. We've come to Earth. Yay, yippee, now we can do our work that we came here to do, the growth plans that we created. Oh, here comes a bus coming to hit you, and here comes you're losing your job, and here comes this, and all this stuff is coming. That's how the soul sees it. The soul doesn't see bad experience. It only sees experience. The ego says, oh, this is a bad experience, and pushes it away.
Hmm. We talk about, I know that you talk about it as well, that, you know, trying to find some way to, you know, to transform your loss, you know, to transform your grief. And I know you talk about transforming loss into love. So, you know, how does one do that by raising their awareness? I mean, how do you transform your loss into love? I mean,
exactly what you said. You raise your awareness.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to write a book. You don't have to go out and teach. You don't have to channel. You just have to shift your position.
Mm.
And that's such a big thing. And I'll use again the example of the woman whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver. She's very focused on this 18-year-old kid who was driving the car has to go to jail and be punished for drinking and driving. And when I talk to her about this, I go, you know, there's so many other possibilities. He could do community service and go speak at high school to kids and tell his story and help people rather than just stick him in jail and, you know, traumatize his whole family and their life. But if that's what happens, that's their little move on the kaleidoscope, that now they have an 18-year-old kid who's going to be in prison, you know, and will struggle forever because of that. So
right.
Shifting your awareness of how things work is how you transform trauma into growth or loss into love or any way that you want to say it. It's just change the way you look at it.
Yeah, you know, people often, you know, mention to us that, you know, they don't necessarily get any signs or communications from loved ones. And I think part of the problem is that a lot of people, you know, they watch a lot of TV and they see these shows where, you know, these messages are so astounding and they're clear and they're like direct, you know, conversations. But, you know, communication, I guess spirit communication seems to be a very subtle thing. It's not earth-shattering. People just don't, they're expecting something that's unrealistic, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and I think this is one of the problems about the whole New Age thing, is there have been a lot of teachers out there that probably had the best intentions, but they teach ideas that actually make people feel like they're not doing it right or that they're inadequate. And this is one of my big arguments with The Secret, for example.
Right.
Where, you know, people are walking around saying, well, you know, I'm trying to manifest a perfect relationship in a big house and a lot of money, and it isn't working. I guess I'm not spiritual enough.
I
have people say that to me all the time.
Mm.
And I say, well, you know what? So what did you manifest? You manifest illness. You manifest you lost your job. You lost your house. You are manifesting perfectly. These are the experiences that are coming to you for your growth. Whoever told you that if you're spiritually enlightened, you'll be able to materialize new cars and lots of money is lying. It doesn't work that way. You know, just like on the traditional biblical way of looking at things, that God punishes you and it's all random, there's an equivalent to that on the New Age side, which is also a way of thinking that you have to unhook from.
Right. So, I mean, I guess all of this comes down to we believe, we were brought up to, we were taught and educated in our societal beliefs, you know, to believe that we're really separate entities. You know, we have to start thinking that the separation is just an illusion. You know, that we are connected in so many different ways, not only to other people in the physical, but to, you know, people in spirit. And I guess those are some of the techniques that you teach.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the way you described it as, you know, separation being an illusion, it is very much like the Course in Miracles, which is a huge inspiration to me. And separation is an illusion. We are not separate from God, from the light, from source, whatever you want to call it. We are emanations. We're reflections of that light. That's the true thing that we really are inside these chunky little bodies that we have. And it's interesting because I've actually gone back to school and I'm working on a degree in religious studies, and I'm studying all the religions from their very beginning. And when you strip away all the politics and all the social mores and all the stuff that religions have layered onto themselves, in the beginning, in all of them, was one theme that runs through them all, which is that we come from the light. And that's what we are, and we're still connected to it. But you've got to dig really deep to find that.
Right. And that's a good thought to leave our listeners with. We've come to the end of our time, and we really appreciate your being with us. We hope you'll join us again. I want to remind listeners that you can follow Terry Daniels' work on danieldirect.net, and you can look at her book on Amazon or on a link on our website, Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. Thanks so much for being with us, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you too.
And we look forward to speaking with you soon.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, bye. Take care.
Thank you. Before we say goodnight, I just want to, as we always close lately, with a prayer for the Gulf. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, corals, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was written by Masaru Emoto on May 9th, 2010. And if everybody can continue to send healing prayer to the waters in the Gulf.
Right. And Dr. Emoto was famous for healing experiments with water. So it's very...
Taking foul water and making it drinkable again.
Right.
So...
That brings us to the close of the show.
And so we'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it. Good night, everyone.